Recordings have started.
Hey, thanks, Harvey. Well, welcome, everyone, and good afternoon and good evening. Welcome to the review of All Rights Protection Mechanism Subteam Data Call on the 11th of January, 2018. On the call today, we do have Rebecca Tushnet, Susan Payne, Kathy Kleiman, Kurt Pritz, Michael Graham, J. Scott Evans, Philip Corwin, and Christine Durain. We have no apologies. From ICANN staff, we have Mary Wong, Julie Hedlund, Barry Cobb, Ariel Liang, Antonietta Mangiacati, and myself, Michelle Desmiter. As a reminder, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and I'll turn the meeting back over to you, Julie Hedlund.
Thank you very much, Michelle. And thank you, everyone, for joining today. We really appreciate it. So, as mentioned, just prior to the start of this call, staff had noted also in the email we'd sent yesterday with the agenda, for the agenda, we will do an update on the RFP. We'll complete discussion on Section 3, the trademark brand owners, page 20, and then commence discussion on either Section 2 registrars or Section 4 registrants. And then we'll go over the timing of future meetings. So at this point, for the update on the RFP, Ariel, did you want to address that?
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel from staff. So I sent an email to the subgroup informing you the staff process for completing the RFP preparation is close to end, and we can launch the RFP a little bit earlier than we anticipated. So we did ask two questions to the subgroup. One is whether you feel comfortable to share the draft data table with the full PDP working group by 22nd of January. And the reason is we will highly recommend to include this data table in the RFP documentation to provide vendors more detail on the scope of the project and so they can help develop a targeted proposal. And even if it's in draft form, it will be very helpful, and then we will make sure to make the clarification at the beginning so they understand it's still a work in progress. And then in the meantime, the subgroup can continue working on this data table, and we will have another opportunity to share update on that with the RFP participants later on. So that's the first question, and then the second question is if you have any suggestions for potential vendors we can reach out to, we will really appreciate that, and it's highly encouraged by procurement. So we can send out the RFP to a targeted vendor and facilitate the responses. So that's just a quick overview of this email, and I will stop for a moment. And if Mary and Julie, Barry, others have comments, please chime in. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ariel. And I see that Kurt and Kathy have their hands up. Kurt first, then Kathy.
Thanks, Julie. This is Kurt. I wouldn't send them this full document with all these columns, and I don't think it's necessary to show the machinations that we went through to get from the charter questions to the GNSO set of areas of inquiry to the specific questions. So I think that they'd find that confusing. So I would make a chart with the charter questions and then the questions we're developing here.
Thank you very much, Kurt. Kathy, please.
I was going to say something else, but I don't think we can ignore. Sorry, Kurt. I don't think we can ignore that first column, purpose and scope, which, if I remember correctly, is all the subteam work from earlier subteams that were working on data. That so it's really like, if you were going to reorder the columns, we started with charter questions, went to purpose and scope after a lot of work, and we're kind of clarifying purpose and scope. But I think they should have the purpose and scope column. not sure how we narrow down the data from there, because I understand what you're saying that we need to, but I think we need that first column. Oh, and I'm glad Christine's in the queue, because she was part, you know, be interested to hear what you say, Christine. I really wanted to just throw the analysis group into the mix. Clearly, they understand what all the basic terminology means, and they've got lots of data. So let's throw them in as a possible as somebody that we reach out to for this RFP. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Christine, please.
Hi, thank you. This is Christine for the record. It is my understanding, and I could be wrong, so I'm hoping that someone can go back and look. Maybe staff has a second to go back. I'm fairly certain that the purpose and scope column was the section that came from the draft document that the co-chairs presented to the GNSO. I could be wrong about that, but I thought that was where the sort of co-chairs came through and tried to summarize to make it a digestible or easy version for the GNSO Council. If that's the case and it wasn't actually a community effort, oh, it looks like Mary is confirming. So I not that I want to like offend our co-chairs and make it seem like they didn't do a good job, but I don't think it was actually fully vetted. And I know that when we talked last week, we actually thought that one of those purpose and scope questions was a little bit it didn't quite capture everything we were trying to capture. It was too limiting. And I know we don't want to be too limiting. And so I don't feel like we have to send the purpose and scope section because I don't think that that was anything that we sort of arrived on as a big group. On the other hand, I'm going to say I don't strongly oppose the inclusion of it. I feel like of all of those sections, the purpose and scope section is actually the least robust. So if I were a survey provider, I would be focusing in the more robust sections anyway. So I think the purpose and scope is kind of a throwaway. So whether it's there or not, not a big deal. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. And Ariel has her hand up to speak a little bit more to the RFP. So I'd like to go to her, please.
Thanks, Julie. So I just wanted to clarify the purpose and scope, and I think we're all referencing the charter question. So in part of the RFP document, we have copy paste the whole list of charter questions as a reference to it's part of the explanation of the scope of the work. So I just want to clarify that it's already in the critical document for the RFP.
Thank you, Ariel. Kathy, please.
Sorry, old hand.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions concerning this update? Then, seeing no further hands, I'm just looking at the chat to see if there's something else. I know Kathy has noted, how do we go back to the original data subteam questions? But Christine is saying those are the charter questions. The original charter questions are stockpiled for later after we have data. They are the ones that are really biased and unclear, so not very helpful. Kathy, please?
Yeah. Taking a closer look, I think relevant charter questions is the kind of revised charter questions. So take away anything I said about purpose and scope. It looks like that is the column. The relevant charter questions are really the updated charter questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. So then we'll move on to the second item on the agenda. So that's to complete the discussion on Section 3, trademark brand owners. And so if we could get that document up, and I'll try to get us to where we left off, and then I'll turn things over to you, Michael.
Yes, Julie, it's Michael, and I think although you had mentioned page 20, since some of the revisions and some questions arose on page 19, we ought to start there on the how many claims notices have you received?
Thank you very much, Michael. Let me move to that section. Appreciate that. All right, this is Julie again. Let me just, because I, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the page numbers are different in the PDF from the Google. Because I'm seeing comments in here. Okay, and I know we talked about this one where we obtain feedback and actual brand owner experiences. I'm sorry again, Michael, exactly where would you like to start?
That was actually, let's see, feedback on actual evidence. I was down at, let me see where you are.
I'm on what
it
is in the PDF.
It actually would be the previous question, so it would be obtain feedback on number of cease and desist letters.
Okay.
Where we had had the discussion of whether or not we refer to that.
There it is.
Okay,
obtain feedback on number of cease and desist letters. Let me just line that up.
There
we are. Thank you.
So what I wanted to do was to go through again, the two groups of questions. Now, there was some discussion from what I was able to get revised and what went up here, and I want to address that and probably make some changes in what is up here. So on the far right column, the changes were how many claims notices have you received for your TMCH registered trademarks, followed by how many of these claims notices did you follow up with some action? And then the question, what action did you take? And the discussion there was that we might make that a multiple choice answer then to select from one or another and then to have another file. If that's the case, then I think we need to come up with what those actions would be. Obviously, one of them, which is in the following question, was sending a cease and desist letter. So then, Rebecca, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, this is Rebecca Tushnet. So, I mean, I wonder whether at this stage it would be better to not to do too much about the options. I mean, if we want to list possible actions we think people might have taken, you know, I'm not unalterably opposed, but it seems like the list might be developable with this, with a survey expert rather than now. But, you know, if we want to list them for review, I don't think that's terrible either, but I'm not sure it needs to be done. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. I see where you're going, and I agree with it. The one issue I would have with the idea that there might be multiple choices, maybe we would have to abandon that in terms of the survey expert, only because I'm not certain that the survey expert would also be an expert in the procedures that might be followed in these cases. So I wonder, you know, we'd either have to leave it open-ended and have the survey takers, the trademark owners, provide a description of what action they took, or assist the survey taker. But I see your point, which is good. Kathy, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that we leave it to the survey takers and then add I thought we had talked about it last week, kind of the line, and what response did you get, and kind of leave it at that.
Okay, right.
Thanks.
So that sort of ends at that what action did you take, and I suppose that could be followed, which is not in here, is do you believe your actions were successful? And then if so, please describe. If not, please describe. Now, that is totally open-ended, and I added here, I'll get you in just a moment, Susan, just for clarification, the primary method that most trademark owners I know of would either be a letter of concern or a cease and desist letter. And I utilize the terminology following this with, if you sent a cease and desist letter, it would be followed by these other questions. But before we get into that, Susan, you had a comment?
Yeah, thank you. I just had a quick question, and apologies if this has been covered in a previous call that I missed. I
I do apologize. But in terms of just the first bit about how many claim notices have you received for your TMCH registered trademarks, are we seeking information here on how many times a brand owner got a claims notice about their own mark? Or when we say claims notice, do we actually mean notice of registered name, which is the kind of the second part where the brand owner gets told that someone's registered a name?
My understanding is that it would be that second part. So that's why it was we inserted the TMCH registered trademarks to try and be clearer that this would be where the notice has gone out to the applicants. The applicants have gone ahead, and once the domain name registers, then the trademark owner receives a notification of that.
Yeah, I mean, because I think the problem is that obviously some brand owners received claims notices for their own trademarks. It was a more common occurrence than you would actually think, depending on if they were using different providers. So it's perfectly conceivable for someone to be answering this as though you're asking them the question, did you receive claims notices about your own mark? So I think we have to, yeah, Christine is putting in the chat, she thinks we ought to use the terminology notice of registered name, because otherwise there'll be there could be some misconception about what's being asked.
Okay, and that would be the NORN, and I would agree with that totally right there. So it'd be how many claims notices have you received, or how many notice of, yeah, NORNs.
Yeah, quite.
Put that in here, yeah. And then the next question would also be changed. Maybe that would be where we introduce NORN as the acronym. Then how many of these NORNs did you follow up with some action? What actions did you take? And then insert under there, do you believe these actions were successful? If so, why? If not, why? Would be the sub-questions for that. Kathy?
Yeah, I guess we've all got a new acronym, NORN. We have to embed that in our consciousness. Okay, so what actions did you take? What response did you get? Can I suggest something more neutral, like, you know, how do you feel about it? I know that sounds too touchy-feely, but the word successful is probably a loaded one, you know, because we're not asking about the strings, and maybe we want to ask about the strings, what was the word? I don't know if we want to go that far, but successful. We're getting into kind of more legal areas now. And if we don't know the string, so, you know, is it possible, you know, I don't know how far we want to dive into the details, but, you know, they might not feel they were successful because someone responded and said no, because I'm in a completely different category of goods and services, or you're operating, you know, in Timbuktu and I'm operating in Zimbabwe. And, you know, I don't know how far we want to go. So successful, I think, is you know, kind of a term that has different meanings to it. So if we could go more neutral on that, I'd appreciate it.
Ian, is there a specific language you might suggest, Kathy, maybe in the...
What response did you get, and what's your response to that response, or something?
Were you satisfied?
Are you satisfied? Right. Good. Same word, same moment. Great.
If so, why? If not, why? That
sounds good to me.
That would be fine. What actions? And hopefully the staff has gotten that. We'll be able to put that in. Now, following that question, then, and I think these were inserted by me. I'm not sure. I don't have the history and revised, but this was focusing on in the use of cease and desist or similar types of things. I use cease and desist simply because that's generally, I think, how I think of these. If we are challenging someone, whether or not it's a nice cease and desist or a mean cease and desist is another question. But I guess, let's see how many. So the earlier question was the more general, did you follow up with some action? Then it would be the more specific question of how many of these claims notices did you follow with a cease and desist? And I suppose we might insert there, or similar type of letter. And then I don't know, I mean, I guess we could ask if you did not, I mean, if you left it alone, why? I don't know. That's sort of a difficult one because that's getting into subjective and these questions, at least on the right, far right column, I was looking at it, trying to get those as empirical as possible so that they would come up with a number. If there was some follow-up to it, it would go into the third column next to it for the anecdotal answers. Kathy, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I think we're way outside the scope of the charter questions when I look at column two. Do we have to ask anything else or just leave it to the survey people after that? There's a whole bunch of variations of cease and desist questions. Like, can we just – we've got, you know, three really general questions that seem to kind of encapsulate your experiences with the NORN. Can we leave it at that in both columns three and four, kind of leave it – for the more general, more anecdotal, and then let people fill it in from there.
And I'm looking back then at the second column, which would be the charter question, to see what the scope of those were. The cease and desist reference came, I think, from the summary of the scope that was presented to the GNSO, but the specific charter question, does the trademark claims notice to domain name applicants meet its intended purpose? If not, is it intimidating, hard to understand, or otherwise inadequate? If inadequate, how can it be improved? Does it inform domain name applicants of the scope and limitation of trademark owners' rights? If not, how can it be improved? And then there's a question on translation. Jay Scott, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, once again, I just wonder why we're asking trademark owners about the claims notice. It seems to me that what their opinion is on it is irrelevant. It's the applicant's opinion that's most relevant, and I think when you ask someone those kinds of questions, you're just wasting space. So I don't think that you might say ask something to the effect you believe claims notices are serving their intended purpose or something like that, but I don't think I would get into the subjectivity of what they feel or think registrants or applicants are gleaning from the notice. That's my opinion.
Christine?
Thanks. This is Christine for the record. I see what you're saying, Jay Scott, and I agree with you to a great extent. As the person that co-chaired with Michael the claims sub-team, I know that one of the things we talked about here with respect to A, not the subparts A, does the trademark claims notice to domain name applicants meet its intended purpose? Thinking about trying to, you know, reduce the amount of cyber squatting, not legitimate activity, but actual cyber squatting, right? And one of the sort of data points that we were going to pull out is getting to, like, what was the experience of trademark holders? So it's not really captured well in the charter question. I think I'll admit that now that we're digging into it. But it's, we're attempting to look at it from the reverse, which is to say, can we extrapolate about the trademark holders' experience, the registrant's experiences by the behavior of trademark holders? So if the trademark claims notice was effective, then trademark holders would receive very few NORNs and have to respond to them in a very, you know, and not have to respond to very many of them. To the extent they did get a NORN and decided to follow up with a cease and desist letter or some other form of action or you know, outreach, you know, to that extent, were there people that still came back and said, geez, I got that, but I don't know what it was, I didn't understand it, or, yeah, I got that, screw you, go, you know, take a long walk off a short pier. I think that's where this was headed when we started drafting it. I agree that I think we are getting really into the weeds here, and we don't need to know that much about the specifics of trademark owners and specific trademark or brand owner actions. But to the extent that we can extrapolate any problems that either the NORN itself had or the trademark claims notice had by the way that trademark holders reacted, interacted with future or you know, the people that ultimately became registrants, you know, I think that's where we were trying to go, and maybe we can think about how we can redirect the questions in that way. Does that help anyone at all?
Yeah, Christine, it's Michael, for the record. It certainly does, and after Susan talks, I do have a proposal for dealing with the fourth column. But Susan?
Yeah, thanks. I put my hand up before Christine started speaking, and so she said a lot of what I was going to say, although much better than I would have said it. But I think in a way the data questions about sort of how many NORNs did you get and then what did you do about them is really valuable, because in fact it almost doesn't matter how many NORNs people got, notices of registered names, but I mean if the result of getting those and the brand owner looking at it was for them to go, well, this is okay, I don't need to send a cease and desist on this one, it's not a problem, That would be, you know, that would tend to suggest that there has been an effect from the claims notice, because the people who proceeded with a registration were ones where it wasn't viewed as an infringement. So I think those data points together about, you know, how many NORNs you got and then whether you perceived that as something you needed to do anything about, I think is really useful and valuable information.
Thanks, Susan. Let me make a quick proposal then, looking at this and listening to all of the discussion, and I agree it gets into some very interesting areas of information, but does not address the charter question. My suggestion would be to remove everything from what's now on the screen as the fourth bulleted item, how many of these claims notices did you follow with a cease and desist letter, to remove from there to the end of this block, so all the way down to in how many such actions did you lose, remove those questions and just leave those general questions up at the top for this part of the inquiry, that suggestion. And I wonder if maybe we can do a plus minus, how would that go? Well, that wants to do with my hand up. Yeah, the agree, if you agree with that change, maybe do a green check mark.
Hi, Michael, it's Susan. Would you mind if I just ask you a quick question?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm not entirely following where we're deleting from, because there's all sorts of bullets.
Okay. You're looking at the screen?
Yeah.
Okay, so the fourth column over, we would keep how many claims, how many NORNs, I'm not going to use the long way, have you received for your trademark, TMCH registered trademarks, followed by how many of these claims notices did you follow up with some action? What actions did you take? What were your feelings about these actions and response? And we're going to have some questions with that. Those are the general questions. Everything after that, then, that's in here now, we would remove. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I think what we're getting at, and albeit with the understanding that asking someone, do you think the notice that the person over there received was sufficient, may not be the best way to get at that information. Still, it's going to the perception of the trademark owners. That's appropriate in the third column that we haven't started talking about. And those questions are in there, I believe.
Okay.
Okay. So does anyone object to making that change?
Hi, this is Rebecca Teschnet. Sorry, I had to leave the chat room, but I was in the chat room. I suggested instead of how do you feel about it, why not was it resolved? What was the resolution? Which I think doesn't require people to give their judgments. Although, if we are interested in sort of what people who proceeded with their registration said to trademark owners who objected, we could ask specifically about that.
Would that be, Rebecca, just to follow up on that, would it be perhaps a line of questioning, was the matter resolved, question mark? So what was the resolution, question mark?
Right.
And then perhaps follow that with, do you have any do you have any response to that resolution?
Well, I'm not sure that really gets at it. I mean, something like, what if any was the registrant's justification for continuing with the registration? Something like that. Right. If we're interested in, what people who have received the notices and continued then said, then that seems like the most direct way to get at it. It is, secondhand reporting, but.
But I guess, Rebecca, I think that might be an interesting way of approaching it, because we might have, applicants, are they going to self-identify that they, failed in this or and abandoned? Or perhaps we're going to have to get that information from trademark owners who were involved in something like this and then the applicant abandoned and, said something. Yes, in court of law, it's hearsay. We're not going to get it in there. But at least it's trying to elicit information that might be useful. And once it's obtained, we can determine what to do with it.
Right. Well, it's two different populations that we're interested in. We're interested in people who didn't proceed with the registration and why, but we can't learn anything about them by asking trademark owners. We might be able to learn something about people who continued after receiving the notice by what they then said to trademark owners.
Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind in drafting a final version of this. Let's turn to the third column, which was for the anecdotal responses. And I think, as I say, this was sort of addressed to answer more specifically, to the extent it could be answered from the trademark owner's standpoint, the charter question. What I'd like to do is just read through each of these questions one at a time. After I read it, ask if anyone has an objection to that being included or a change to it. And I'm going to do with the revised versions that are on the screen here. So the first question is, what did you do in response to receiving the NORN? I guess that should be. And we've already asked that over in the other column. I wonder if we should decide where we want to have that.
Michael, this is Susan, and I forgot to put my hand up. I wondered, does it matter if we have it in both places? I mean, just thinking back to the purpose of this document and the fact that it's going to be the guidance for the survey providers, I mean, does it? I'm not sure. I don't feel strongly, but I'm not sure that it matters terribly from my perspective. Anyway.
Okay. Good point. Thank you. Christine?
Same point. I was just going to go a step further and say that, excuse me, I think that the questions ultimately at the end of the day, of course, logically, will be all mixed up. And so leaving the question in both provides relevant context so that when you start out this little section, sort of we know sort of what the context is for. So I think we should actually leave it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. And again, the point is we're not really drafting the final questions. We expect that those will be drafted by the survey company. I've been disappointed in that regard in the past, but that would be my hope. Okay, so let's leave it in there. The second question is, based on your experience, do you believe the trademark claims notice to domain name applicants has met its intended purpose of notifying applicants of possible conflict with a registered trademark? And that's followed up, so I'll go on. If you do not believe the trademark claims notice has met its intended purpose, can you say why you believe this? And that's followed by the inverse. If you believe the trademark claims notice has met its intended purpose, please explain why you do so. So those three questions together meant to elicit that opinion to the extent possible, and to ask also, why is it that you believe that? Any comments? Christine?
Yeah, just to raise my hand and say I don't object. I think obviously we want them to wordsmith it because it's long. But yeah, I think that's the question we're getting at. So I think we should just ask it and move along.
Okay. And then I guess the next question really was intended to get a little bit deeper into that. And again, this is going at the hearsay angle of it, I suppose. Have any of the domain applicants you have challenged said anything about not having understood the claims notice? If so, what did they say? Kathy?
Hi. Just a quick word change. Instead of applicants, it's probably registrants, because that's why they would be getting the notice, right? So have any of the domain registrants that you've challenged said anything about not having understood the claims notice? Which is an interesting question. Interesting, trying to get information from a registrant from the trademark owner, but I guess it is a process. Anyway, just that one word change. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. That's a good change if we can enter that. Then, in the most subjective, I guess, of questions in this line, do you believe the claims notice sent, and I guess that should be the trademark claims notice sent to domain name applicants, and then there's a note, a copy of which is attached, so we would instruct that it should be part of the survey, inform domain name applicants of the scope and limitations of trademark owners' rights, question mark. And that's followed by the sub-questions. If not, please explain. And then also a specific question, what else do you believe applicants should be advised of in the notice? Christine?
Hi, this is Christine for the record. I just wanted to say that I think that this really does actually go with that just the previous section you just read. It kind of is very, very similar to that first one in this section. And so I don't really oppose it. I think I would like to see sort of all four of these kind of bunched up together in a couple of quick little tick boxes with a few little optional word text boxes to make it easy for people to answer. But, yeah, I support that. Thanks.
Okay. Just addressing that and the way you would structure that, do you think that's something that we should do for the surveyor, or do you think company, or do you think that's something that they would do if they look at these unprofessional questions?
No, I think that they should intuit that these four are related.
Okay.
And if they don't, well, we maybe should reevaluate our choice.
I like the point. Kathy?
Yeah. The phrase, what else do you believe? Let me phrase it a different way and see if it makes sense. What might you add or change? And that way it's not just asking if they want to add anything. Would they change anything in kind of how this is presented? So, again, changing what else do you believe applicants should be advised in the notice to what else might you add or change in the notice to better advise trademark applicants?
I like that entire phrase, if we did that.
Thank you.
And, yeah, Ariel, if you can capture that, I hope. Well, we can capture that from the transcript, of course. Great.
Michael, if I might?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Not what would you, what might you, because would is different. What might you? You know, it's an option. Thanks.
Okay. Again, I think, you know, the important thing is to try and get across a sense of what we think ought to be asked to the survey company. I think that does that, so that's great. Then sort of a secondary approach to this, really going, and I, for this reason, I don't know if this is appropriate or not, is really going at the trademark owner's experience with, I suppose, with the Norns. It says, do you receive any communications for the TMCH, which is a pretty broad question. If so, are they clear or not? Please explain. Again, neither of these are looking specifically at the Norn. They're not looking at the trademark claims notice. And then, you know, it goes deeper into that. How have you reacted to them, the communications? So I'm not sure if that line of questioning, since what we're looking at is not so much the adequacy of the notice of registration to the trademark owner as looking at the claims notice to the trademark applicant, if perhaps this question, this line of questions might be removed. And having posited that for your thought, you'll note that the following questions then, okay, the next question, when you sent the cease and desist letter to applicants, how did they react? Really is a holdover from the other column, and I think that question and its sub-question, did they say anything about the trademark claims notice they received, might be removed, although that is asking for that, that hearsay, but I think we've already asked for that in the fourth column question, so we could remove both of those questions and be fine. So that would be my suggestion. Remove from do you receive any communications from the TMCH down to the did they say anything about the trademark claims notice they received, and just remove those from the questions. And I don't see anyone opposed to that. I will move down to the next one, which is question, which is should claims notifications only be sent, and I think that should be trademark claims notifications. Should trademark claims notifications only be sent to domain name applicants at the time they apply for the domain name or at the time they their domain name is registered? Please explain your answer. Christine?
Christine, for the record, I do not disagree, which is a really backwards way of saying I agree, I guess. The point of this question, or the reason we're talking about when domain name applicants slash get the claims notice, is because of pre-orders. When a registrar takes a pre-order, that's the time at which the person has to click. The registrar has to, you know, they don't log back in at the, after the pre-order when the claims notice is going to be displayed, and then registrars were having problems with how to get the notice to the customer, et cetera. And so there was some talk of should there be some options on when the claims notice gets displayed. I am not entirely sure if everybody is aware that that's sort of a registrar complication or a registrar issue, or an issue registrars face. Let me rephrase that, an issue registrars face. So I'm wondering, since this is going to brand owners, if this question requires explanation or not. And I see Susan, our resident registrar's hand up, so maybe she knows the answer. Thanks.
Well, hi, it's Susan. I don't have my hand up as a registrar in this context, mainly because I don't think, as in terms of our registrar business, we don't run the pre-orders in that way, so it's never been an issue for us. But I was just going to question whether this has only come about as a result of the pre-order issue. And you may well be right, Christine. I'm not sure, but it did seem to me that it's come up a few times in the context of our conversation in the wider working group, where you know, there have been one or two people who've been making the point that they think, wider kinds of notices go first. They have a chilling effect. Registrants shouldn't get there shouldn't be a notice until after the domain is registered. That way, there's no chilling effect. So I'm not sure that this is entirely a pre-registration issue, but I'm happy to be corrected.
And Susan and Christine, I'll put this out there. I mean, if this is a registrar issue, is it appropriate to be asking the trademark owner for what they believe? I'm not sure if that's of value to the consideration of when that notice should be issued or not. Christine, you put your hand back up.
Thanks, Christine, for the record. Yeah, I agree with Susan. I know we have talked about it in a wider context. I know that the registrars have noted that there is this issue of pre-registrations. I know that brand owners have, a strong feeling that the notice should be displayed, early and perhaps often. You know, that the contracted parties probably want the notice to be displayed less often and less early. So, yeah, I think this is relevant to brand owners because this is the point at which the registrant is theoretically put on some sort of notice about trademark rights that may exist and may or may not conflict with the registrant's intended use. So I think the brand owners do care at what point that notice is presented. And maybe then to Susan's point, maybe it needs to be more open-ended. I was reading this as either or, at the time they apply or at the time there's registered. Perhaps it was a more broad or, like, is it here, is it at the time of application and or at the time of registration and or some other time? Do you have other options? Maybe it's really meant to be, here's two common options that are discussed, but offer us your own opinion. I don't know, but I'm not going to tell Susan that I think this only has to do with registrars, because I do actually, I think this does implicate, other factors as well. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Kurt, you have your hand up.
Yep. Thank you, Michael. This is Kurt. So I have a couple points. One is I agree with Christine's point that if we ask this question, it requires a preamble because it really is the timing might be a fine point that of which many trademark owners are not aware. So it would require some explanation that, currently the way the system works is, when you try to register a name before you're allowed to register your name, the trademark claims notice is given. And then my second point is, regardless of whether we're asking this question because of a potential chilling effect or because of the onus it puts on registrars, I think in either case, it'd be important to know what trademark owners think of the timing of the notice. And so the way we might ask the question to and make it easier to answer is in a multiple choice way. So, give the background about when the notice is given and then say, the notice could be given at this time or it could be given, after the registration is made, and then ask the trademark owners if they think having the notice before the actual registration is very important, kind of important, not important, something like that. So we can get input from the trademark owners about whether they think the timing is important or not. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt. Lori? Lori's been losing and gaining audio. Do you have it now? I guess not. She's dropped off. I think that would be useful in light of the comments. I think the two parts of that, one of having a preamble to it and then have that followed up with sort of a general ability to answer. I don't know if the importance of filing, of timing, we could ask about. I don't know how far that would get us. But that one, let me put together a question for that, and I will pose it after we get off the call. for everyone to take a look at. Then after that, we're into the next, which is obtaining feedback on actual brand owner experiences regarding the evidence of harm intended to be addressed by the claims, RPMs. And then the question in the charter question was, what is the evidence of harm under the existing exact match system? And so there were two ways of approaching this, again, as usual, and I'll go to the third column first in this case. So that would be the anecdotal. We only have about 8 minutes, so I'm not sure if I'll get through all this. But let me go ahead and read it. Kurt, is your hand back up? Is that old hand? And Lori, your hand's back up. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to echo Christine and Kurt. And to the extent that, yes, I think a preamble is wise, because unless you're a trademark practitioner day in and day out, my guess is most people don't have a clear understanding of when the communications are supposed to come, and maybe even why. You know, why seems to be obvious, but it may not be. So supporting the work, I guess, at this point.
And Lori, supporting that being an open-ended question to see what sort of response we might get from trademark owners?
I know there's a lot of practitioners out there that stick to prosecution and don't always get into the domains. That's my only point. There's even, yeah, I mean, I think there's even a lot of differential experience even among trademark attorneys, that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess in thinking about that, there would only be certain people who would be answering the question. And, again, the number of responses, the nature of the responses, I think that's something then that after the question's asked, we'll be able to make those decisions based on, you know, what sort of responses we get back, what sort of expertise. But I think it's worth exploring that area just to see if there are feelings, if any practitioners have developed a particular feeling of when it would be better to have that. And I know the question has arisen whether or not the notice should be at early phase or later in the process. So going back then to this last question, are you aware of what harms were meant to be addressed by the Trademark Claims Service of notification of TMCH registration to applicants? Requirement of statement of non-infringement and notification of trademark owners upon registration of TMCH registered names. So it's sort of a mouthful, but basically the question is, are you aware of what harms were meant to be addressed by the claim service notification to applicants? And it's a yes-no answer. Do you have any evidence of harm being addressed, of the harm being addressed actually occurring prior to the claims service? And I guess that would be prior to the trademark. Wait a minute, let me see. Do you have any evidence of the harm being addressed? Kathy, you got your hand up while I'm mulling over this.
Yeah, Michael. I'm sorry. I don't understand the question. Do you have any evidence of the harm being addressed actually occurring prior to the claims service? I know we've talked about claims notices. The claims notice to the applicant, the NORN to the trademark owner. What are we talking about here? Sorry, the requester, whoever drafted it. Thanks.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to pause it because I think I drafted this, and I think what I was trying to get at was, so we're addressing this particular harm of somebody applying for a domain name. And being advised of these particular trademark owner rights or trademark rights and being asked, do you think you should go ahead? And I think this second question was intended to address before the new GTLD program, where we put in this claims notice, are you aware of any harm that was occurring in trademark applications or in domain name applications that this harm is addressing? You know, I think it's probably more confusing a question than anything, and I would, because I think the first question and then the one down below are actually better, I would actually remove the second bulleted question. I have anyone who would fight for it? Susan?
I'm not going to fight for it because I think it would be, there isn't really a comparable situation, or at least not in any recent times, because of course, you know, the claims only comes at a certain point in the launch cycle of the registry. And so there, you know, unless we're going back to the launch of something like .eu, we don't have comparisons. So I'm not fighting for it. But I think a slightly different variation of that question would look at the timing of the claims notice, which I'm not sure if we certainly ask other recipients questions about timing. But so, you know, the idea that perhaps, you know, are you aware of any harm after the end of the claims period that an ongoing claims notice would have addressed? I mean, that might be of interest. I'm speaking off the top of my head somewhat, so I'm happy to be shot down over this. But you know, the sort of what happens when they stop, as opposed to what happened in previous registries. Did I make any sense at all?
Yeah, that actually did make sense on both points, I think. And I think a rewording of that second question might save it so that it actually becomes a question of before the institution of the trademark claims notices, do you think these address a harm that occurred before, and if so, what was that harm? Something along those lines. Again, I'm going to have to redraft it. I hate to say that, but I can do that. The last question then down below, or the next question, do you have any evidence? And I think this do you have any evidence that you, your company, or your trademarks, or your ability to register trademark domain names have been harmed in any way by the fact that claims notices are only issued to exact match applications? And I think that's inartfully phrased question, but I think it's a question that should be asked. Kathy?
As we go into 6 o'clock, I think we should think about a more neutral way to phrase it. I think it is a leading question, counsel.
And we're not on redirect.
right.
Or cross. I agree with that. I think what it's trying to get at is good. I think it needs to be rephrased, and I will offer that up. Let's see, and I suppose, hang on a moment. And that's followed by a similar question that goes in the other direction. So this question is, have you been harmed by the limited nature of these? And do you have any evidence of broader notifications would be useful and protect the rights of both trademark owners and domain name applicants, Again, I think I would have to say that is leading, but it is asking for evidence. And I think the two questions sort of need to be bunched into one that is not leading and is more objective and gets at the information. I think I can do that. So combine two. And I think we've come to the end, unfortunately, of our session. Have not gotten to the questions on the right here, which are the final ones in this section. Can I ask if between now and our next call, you might look at those, and if you have any questions, changes to that or such, enter them in the Google document. Julie, do you want to set up when our next call is, and then perhaps find out to which of the other sections we'll be able to start on after we deal with that last question and these two revised questions that I'm going to work on.
Thank you very much, Michael. Yes, this is Julie Hedlund. I'll try to be quick here. We did have, a second reminder on the doodle poll for the next meeting. And it looked like either the Friday at 1600 UTC or 1700 UTC are working best. So I don't know if we got any more responses to that after Mary's reminder. I think we'll have to take a look at that and see which had the most number of responses so that we can find a time that is not too late for those who are, you know, in the European side of the time zone. So we'll follow up with that to see where we stand on that poll and then send out a notice accordingly. And so then once we complete your section, Michael, then we're going to then either go to, just let me check again, I think it was either the registrars and...
or registrant.
Yeah, I think so. Let me just... let me just check that here real quickly. Yes, so next would be either Section 2, Registrars, or Section 4, Registrants. So whichever, I guess we'll probably need to see who's available on that call of those leaders and then, base it on that as to who picks up. And see, as Mary says, depending on whether Susan or Kurt are available. Yes, exactly.
Okay. And between now and then, I will resubmit some revised questions versions of these last two columns. So thank you very much, everyone. Thanks for allowing us to go over a bit. Hopefully we'll clear up this, and either Susan or Kurt will take us in on the next section, the next meeting. Thanks very much, and I guess we can stop the recording.
Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great morning, afternoon, evening.
Good night.